At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Because we have to, and there's no choice because everyone's talking about it and we can't stop talking about it. We're diving back into the Karen Reed trial. And there's more drama in this, thicker than the Boston fog. Karen Reed's accused of running down her boyfriend, Boston cop John O'Keefe, with her SUV in a 2022 blizzard and leaving him to freeze. The prosecution's leaning hard onto Jennifer McCabe, who says Reed screamed, "I hit him, I hit him, I hit him," like she was auditioning for a true crime doc. Meanwhile, the defense is peddling a theory that O'Keefe was beaten up inside a house and framed, which sounds like it belongs in a conspiracy podcast, not a courtroom. It's a mess of a he said, she said, and here to cut through the noise, retired FBI Special Agent Robin Drake, whose behavioral analysis skills are going to come in handy here. Robin, McCabe's testimony, and we're going to watch some of it here in just a little bit. It seems to be the prosecution's golden ticket thus far, but the defense says she's less reliable than a tabloid. We'll watch some of the testimony in just a little bit. But overall, what have you been gleaning out of the testimony that we've seen thus far out of her?
You're seeing what we expect to see and what we've always seen. And that is, I think we're seeing someone under high stress with a lot on the line, with a lot of moving parts in her life. And I think it's congruent for the situation and stress she's under. And you really hit a key point, I think, which is going differently this time than last time, is that the defense is doubling down on these conspiracy theories with no supporting data.
Yeah.
I think it's fallen apart. I think the prosecution has mitigated to some extent the missteps they did on the investigation, and they're just sticking with the same story. And defense is really sticking with their same story of a fight and a dog attack and all that. And this just that just makes no sense whatsoever from the data we're seeing.
I put something out just the other day about what you would have to believe.
That's a good way to put it.
In order for the defense's theory to be accurate. And it's really when you put it out there like that, it's kind of like, oh God, that is true. And the thing is, you can believe that Karen Reed is innocent and factually innocent of this without believing all of that. All of that just seems to be a lot of fluff that I think is only going to hurt her more than actually help her. And there, you got the two camps where it seems they think that, you know, one has to be doing this in order for this to be true, or one has to be doing that for this to be. It doesn't. It can be completely none of the above. So to believe this, you're going to have to believe that the party full of cops, teachers, and suburban parents and kids turned into a homicide scene while people are checking Celtic scores, watching games, and also listening to It's Raining Men on a cell phone on a happy night that has been documented. At the bar, there was no fights. Everybody was getting along good. All of these people walked away from that night saying it was a good night. They even were texting each other about what a great night it was when they left the house. Some even complimenting of, you know, they think Karen's a really nice person when they saw her at the waterfall. Nothing like better shut up or like nudge, nudge, great night. We killed O'Keefe, you know, and it's cops. Cops don't take kindly to another cop being killed, even if he's like the worst cop on the force. Nobody's like, great, he's dead. And O'Keefe certainly was far from that. He was loved by all these people. So you have to believe that whole conjecture that all of these people on a dime somehow thought John O'Keefe is going to die. Or could have been a fight somewhere. Well, then no one saw this. Nobody saw that he was being drug out to the yard by someone and he's dead. And we're just going to leave him out there when people are looking out the window and people are texting, John, where are you at? Oh, you know, one of your friends killed him. He's in the front yard. Everybody be quiet. We don't want to get him in trouble. A German shepherd named Chloe may or may not have been silently mauling a 6-foot-tall Boston cop. John O'Keefe was allegedly beaten inside the house with no blood, no cleanup, no noise, and no one noticing, and then dragged out to the front yard past Ring cams and neighbors and putting him under a flagpole near the very front of the yard before the snow had completely come falling down. So if you were paying attention in that direction, you would see him. And then that Jennifer McCabe would have to be looking up how's long to die in cold, not because she panicked, but because that's what you do when you're cool with your friend dying in the front yard. And you also need to check basketball scores at the same time. And again, somehow every person involved, cops, spouses, teenagers, all keeping this secret private for 2 years. No one leaks, no stitches. And then they all went back inside and listened to It's Raining Men. That's how... You'd have to believe that theory to be real.
I mean, and think about how much easier I think it would be. Again, I'm not a defense attorney or prosecutor or anything, but just, you know, from a human standpoint of what we're witnessing, think about how much easier it would have been for the defense to say, everyone was drunk, we don't know what happened, but it wasn't her.
Yeah, say that.
Instead of coming up with some kooky theory that just doesn't hold any water, one from all the things that you pointed out, but then I just keep going back to data and laws of probability. It is usually our best indicator. There's been no history of violence of all, any of these people amongst each other. And Jen McCabe herself, I think I'm learning more about why she is the linchpin here, because she was the one that is the great organizer. She's the one that's friends with everyone. She's the one that's the mother of four. She's like and we see them throughout our lives. You know, she's the linchpin that kind of is the hub of the spoke of the wheel, keeping all things together. And as the type of person as we're seeing from her on the stand and all these other aspects of life, she's highly protective of her relationships, her people, her friends, her family. And there's no way I can imagine from the data that we've seen from these data points that she would allow something of potential violence into that house and into this circle. And so there's just nothing to support the in my mind, I hate using the word, the kooky theory of the defense, what they're using. It would have been so much easier to say, we don't know what happened. It wasn't us.
I agree. I think you could argue that you could. I mean, it's interesting what we're hearing right now of Jen McCabe even talking about when they were driving around the next morning with Karen, trying to help her figure out where John was. McCabe even said, well, you know, I'm just paraphrasing, but, you know, he's got a buddy that basically lives across the street. Why don't we check over there? See if he's on the couch. Or did he get in a fight with his friend across the street or something? Because clearly nothing happened at the house. Nobody has anything there other than the defense of Karen Reed made up a story and somehow it got admitted as a probable third party culprit story, which I kind of baffled by in that. Let's watch some of the testimony from Jen McCabe, and we might have some Carrie in here too, because I think this is a very key point in this story and the timeline of how it was presented this round versus how it was presented in the past. And it kind of opened up my eyes a little bit more to it as well, because timeline is important. And when Karen Reed is saying, did I hit him? Could I have hit him? And if she said, I hit him. But the fact that she is freaking out at 5-something in the morning in front of John's niece, because she's still at the house, even though she texted John, I'm leaving your kids and blah, blah, blah. She's still there. She's not being the adult in the room. She's freaking out. The kid has to, like, give her the phone. The kid has to look up the numbers of McCabe and also Carrie to get contact with them, because Karen doesn't have it. And what's Karen freaking out about? Could I have hit him? Did
I? Impact on her.
At that moment in time, before they even found John in the snow. Or even anybody having an idea that he would be in the snow. Hours earlier, she was thinking he's sleeping with somebody else.
Attention is on her.
Let's take a look at this.
At 4:53, my phone rings, and I look at my caller ID. I look at the phone, and it's Kaylee, John's niece. And I say hello, and she said, yeah, well, basically she relayed to me that,
Next question.
When you pick up the phone, could you hear a voice on the other end?
I heard a voice and a lot of screaming.
And the voice you heard, is that Kaylee, John's niece?
Yes.
And the screaming, was it a man or a woman screaming?
It was a woman.
How loud was that person screaming?
Very loud.
Could you make out anything that person was saying as they were screaming?
My name was screamed a lot. And then the other individual ended up getting on the phone with me.
Okay. And who was that person that was screaming in the background?
Miss Reed.
How long was she screaming for while you were speaking to your niece before you spoke to her?
The entire time I was speaking to Kaylee, she was screaming.
Describe her demeanor.
Miss Reed's?
Yes.
Jen! Jen! And then she's screaming that John didn't come home. She left him at the waterfall. She was hysterical. It was very hard to follow what she was saying.
How long did that first call last for?
I'm not sure how long, maybe possibly a few minutes, but it was loud enough and long enough that my husband shot up in bed thinking one of my kids had come in the room screaming.
There was two calls made around the same time, one to Jen McCabe and one to Carrie Roberts. Let's watch the Carrie one as well for context.
When she first called, she said, John's dead, Carrie, Carrie, and hung up.
And she called you back?
She called back.
When she called back, was there any other party on the line other than you and her?
No.
What do you remember the second time that she called you?
Yes. She said, John, I think he got hit by a plow. He did not come home last night. He would never not have come home. I wasn't supposed to stay in Canton. And Kaylee was here. He would never leave Kaylee by herself.
Did anybody ever ask you to lie?
No.
Or exaggerate?
No.
Would you?
Say that?
Would you?
No.
Sustained.
You were asked whether or not you told people on January 29th about the missing pieces to the defendant's taillight. And you began to say you didn't tell anybody that morning.
I didn't think it had anything to do with John. I didn't want to point fingers at anybody.
Why not?
Because I had no idea what had happened to him. I wasn't going to point fingers at his girlfriend.
Was it, in fact, broken with missing pieces that morning?
Yes.
All right. Robin Drake, former chief of the FBI's Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. I have two behaviors I want to get your opinion on. Are these credible witnesses? Do they seem like people who are lying and making up a story for a conspiracy? One, and then two, Karen's behavior, saying, I hit him. Could I have hit him? All this on the phone before they even know he's in the yard. Thoughts?
Yeah, they seem credible to me. I mean, it's congruent with, so their behavior seems just baseline congruent. I mean, you're seeing some stress behaviors because they're on stands under questioning, mm-hmm. but it seems plausible. They're congruent. They're congruent with everything we're hearing. Tempo is consistent, so everything looked fine to me. When it came to Karen, the first thing that struck me was at that hour in the morning, she's still under the influence of alcohol mm-hmm. as well. And so we have that, which keeps causing crazy brain. Plus, as we've seen with every other behavior with her in, I think, remember last episode we covered, only 5% of the time is she outwardly focused on the well-being of others.
Yeah.
95% on her and things that impact her. So all the screaming, everything that's going on, you have alcohol-induced self-focus on survival is what mm-hmm. I'm seeing.
Survival, and And is there self-preservation here yet? I don't know. That's what I'm wondering.
I think she's trying to, in a fog of chaos, trying to piece together a narrative on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm seeing.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.